56 Audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMR, Worldwide, Shortwave Radio, 99.55 kHz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please make note of the following schedule changes for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network programming. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m., the Hour of the Time, with yours truly, William Cooper. Monday and Tuesday nights, 9 until 10 p.m., Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham. Thursday nights, 9 until 11 p.m., Home Satellite Radio Show with Dan Morgan. And Friday nights, Friday Night Live with Gary Bourgeois from 9 till 11 p.m. Saturday nights, 9 to 11 p.m., the best of the Hour of the Time with William Cooper. And from 11 p.m. until 1 a.m., American Exposé with Chris Gerner.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
Hello, once again. You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper, the man that William Jefferson Clinton named in a White House memo as the most dangerous radio host in America. And it's true, ladies and gentlemen. The socialists and communists who have infiltrated and are now in control of our government cannot stand the light of truth. And that's the sword that I wield. And you're going to get a heavy dose of it today. Oh boy, are you ever. Make sure you've got pen and paper. You're going to need to take a lot of notes. If you can, record it, because you're going to want to refer back over and over and over again. But before we get started, folks, I want to give you the scheduling for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network programming so that you'll have it. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m., the Hour of the Time, with William Cooper, yours truly. Monday and Tuesday nights, Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham, and no, he will not be leaving the network. Thursday nights, 9 to 11 p.m., Home Satellite Radio Show with Dan Morgan, and that's turning out to be a real, real good broadcast. Friday nights, 9 to 11, everybody's favorite, Friday Night Live with Gary Bourgeois. Saturday, 9 to 11 p.m., the best of the Hour of the Time with William Cooper, yours truly. And from 11 p.m. until 1 a.m., American Exposé with Chris Gerner. And we're probably going to move him up to at least an hour earlier time slot, but for right now, that's where he's at. And we take great pride, ladies and gentlemen, in featuring on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network unscheduled special programming of the highest quality in entertainment, historical, and educational broadcasting. Today's broadcast is going to open your mind, open your eyes, expand your horizons, hopefully take you out of sheepledom, get you out from behind the hoodwink. Yep, you've been hoodwinked, folks. Most people live their lives in some kind of fantasy, believing what they've been told by whatever authority figures they look up to in their life, never questioning anything, never looking anything up themselves, never believing for one moment that anyone could be steering them wrong, leading them down the garden path with rose-colored glasses. But it happens to be true. That is exactly what happens to most of us, not just for a portion of our life, but for all of our lives. We seem to want some savior, some knight in shining armor and a great white stallion to come riding along and rescue us. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. Instead of dealing with reality, we tend to attempt in many various ways to escape into some fantasy. We listen to what sounds good. We do what feels good rather than what we should. And, of course, we never question anything or anybody. And so we have been deceived for many years. It is so easy to deceive the American population. And if you don't believe that, just listen to this broadcast. You're soon going to find out. This is what most people really want. It's what they're looking for. Everybody saw the movie, but not one person in 1,000 understood what it was really all about. Well, maybe after today's broadcast, you will. Yes, he, cute kid, right? Wonderful little girl. Everybody just fell in love with Dorothy. Dorothy had it all together. I mean, gee, couldn't she really get there over that rainbow? Isn't that what most of you would really like to do? Take that trip over the rainbow to the land of Oz and have that merry adventure skipping along the yellow brick road, meeting up with talking scarecrows and cowardly lions and rusty tin men. And, of course, not to mention the good witch Glinda and the wicked witch of the West. The eternal battle between good and evil, by the way. And other things that were represented in that famous motion picture. I have here a tome that was written by my friend David Moore. And he did such a wonderful job that the first hour of this broadcast is going to consist entirely of reading what he wrote here. He's done an excellent job. Some of the stuff is he brought right out of the ether and put it down on paper so that anybody can understand it. A lot of it I have covered over the last 5 years. But here it's all together. Dave put it all together for all of us so that it's not scattered hither and yon and it's easy to understand. So here we go, folks. After you hear this, you'll be a little bit more curious about the law, and you'll be less likely to accept what anybody tells you about anything, because it's purely cut and dry. He says, this memorandum will be construed to comply with provisions necessary to establish presumed fact, Rule 301, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and attending state rules, should interested parties fail to rebut any given allegation of fact or matter of law addressed herein. This position will be construed as adequate to meet requirements of judicial notice, thus preserving fundamental law. Matters addressed herein, if not rebutted, will be construed to have general application. This memorandum addresses authority and jurisdiction of the Federal Communications Commission. The growing interest in and popularity of low-power radio stations in the AM and FM broadcast bands in America is a phenomenon with the potential of sweeping the nation. Thousands of people are operating low-power transmitters, typically capable of generating less than 100 watts, in an effort to provide an alternative to the type of broadcast programming which currently dominates the airwaves offered by the well-funded media giants. It appears, however, that many do so ignorantly, believing themselves and their fellow broadcasters to be unlicensed, quote, pirates, end quote, violating the rules and regulations of the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, and surviving only because of the FCC's limited ability to enforce the law. Are these people pirates, criminals flaunting the law at the expense of others, or have they simply been led to believe this by a government agency that capitalizes on the ignorance of the general population? Is the FCC enforcing the law when it prosecutes low-power broadcasters, or is it engaged in perpetrating a grievous false against the American people? These questions can only be answered by following one simple rule. Believe nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. Gee, where have I heard that before? This memorandum should neither be considered exhaustive nor as legal advice, but only as a starting point for one's own research. It is hoped that others will expand upon this memorandum and dig even deeper to further expose the true nature of the Federal Communications Commission, and folks, that really goes for all agencies of government. Most are operating under the color of law. If you are obeying their dictates because you're scared of them, then that's the truth. All common definitions of words are taken from Webster's 7th New Collegiate Dictionary and shall be referred to simply as Webster's. All legal definitions of words are taken from Black's Law Dictionary with pronunciations, 6th edition, and shall be referred to simply as Black's. Part 1, Creation and Purpose of the FCC. 47 CFR, Section 0.405, Statutory Provisions. The following statutory provisions, among others, will be of interest to persons having business with the Commission. A, a small a, the Federal Communications Commission was created by the Communications Act of 1934, 48 statutes at large, 1064, June 19, 1934, as amended, 47 United States Code, 151-609. Small b, the Commission exercises authority under the Submarine Cable Landing Act, 42 statutes at large, 8 May 1927, 1921, 47 U.S.C., 34-39. Small c, the Commission exercises authority under the Communications Satellite Act of 1962, 76 statutes at large, 419 August 31, 1962, 47 United States Code, 701-744. Small d, the Commission operates under the Administrative Procedure Act, 60 statutes at large, 237, June 11, 1946, as amended. The provisions of the Administrative Procedure Act now appear as follows in the Code. Administrative Procedure Act, 5 United States Code, Section 2-9-551-558, Section 10-701-706, Section 11-3105, 7521, 5362, 1305, and Section 12-559. This section of the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR, lists items pertinent to the FCC which have been provided for by statute. Let us examine some of them in detail. 47 United States Code, Section 151, Purposes of Chapter, Federal Communications Commission created. For the purpose of regulating interstate and foreign commerce in communication by wire and radio, there is created a commission to be known as the, quote, Federal Communications Commission, end quote. The FCC was created by an act of Congress, and we will get to that later, for the purpose of regulating interstate and foreign commerce. The power of law is in the details, especially the definitions of words and phrases. Just what is interstate and foreign commerce in communication by wire and radio? The common meaning of the word interstate is of connecting or existing between two or more states. Commerce, in this context, means the exchange or buying and selling of commodities on a large scale involving transportation from place to place. Foreign means situated outside a place or country. When thinking of foreign commerce, most people would imagine trade with China or Spain. However, definitions in law are often different from commonly understood definitions, as we shall shortly see. Blacks has separate definitions for foreign, foreign nations, foreign states, foreign commerce, commerce with foreign nations, nation, country, interstate, commerce, interstate commerce, interstate and foreign commerce, and state. The serious researchers should examine all of these definitions, as their thorough study could easily fill an entire book, but will not be attempted here. In Blacks, we find interstate commerce, traffic, intercourse, commercial trading, or the transportation of persons or property between or among the several states of the Union, or from or between points in one state and points in another state. Commerce between two states or between places lying in different states. Also from Blacks, interstate and foreign commerce. Commerce between a point in one state and a point in another state. Between points in the same state, through another state, or through a foreign country. Between points in a foreign country are countries through the United States, and commerce between a point in the United States and a point in a foreign country or in a territory or possession of the United States, but only insofar as such commerce takes place in the United States. The term United States means all of the states and District of Columbia, 49 USCA, section 10102. Note the differences between these two definitions. Subtle, yes, but distinct. What is the difference between a state not capitalized and a state capitalized? Are they the same as one of the several states of the Union? Why is the word state capitalized in one place and not in another? What is the difference between the United States and the several states of the Union? It is no accident that the alternate use of state spelled with a small s, state spelled with a capital S, or United States spelled with a capital U and a capital S, and several states of the Union spelled with a small s, capital U, is found throughout the entire American law, as well as Blacks. Yet neither offer clear reasons for this important situation. Again, a thorough study of this subject could easily fill an entire book, and will not be attempted here. However, a clue may be found in one particular definition from Blacks. State, spelled with a capital S, / foreign state, spelled with a capital F, small s. A foreign country or nation. The several United States, spelled with a capital U, capital S, are considered foreign to each other, except as regards their relations as common members of the Union, capital U. In essence, the several states of the Union are foreign and sovereign countries with different laws, etc. That is why people living in Kansas are not subject to the laws of Texas and vice versa. In fact, further research indicates that the several states of the Union are foreign to the United States and the federal government. Even further research indicates that people living in the several states of the Union are not subject, except in specific limited cases, to the laws of the United States any more than they are subject to the laws of France. The astute researcher will notice that the definition does not mention the several states of the Union, but instead mentions the several United States, indicating that, just as there is more than one state, there is more than one United States. These concepts are quite astounding to most people, and in an effort to unravel and understand them, the unprepared researcher may rapidly develop a headache. That's putting it mildly, I should say, when you first start into this. But you quickly get your bearings and get your sea legs, and pretty soon you're sailing a pretty steady vessel into the world of truth and knowledge, and out of the world of fantasy, deception, and confusion. You see, this is how they confuse you, manipulate you, deceive you, and lead you down that garden path with the rose-colored glasses. If words are to have meaning, and laws made up of words are to be enforced, there must be a way to understand the meanings of the words used in the law. Many court decisions have stated this concept, such as the following. The correct format for evaluating the constitutionality of a statute is the expression of crime so clearly explicit that every person of ordinary intelligence may understand specific provisions thereof and determine in advance what is and is not prohibited? Whaley v. State of Oklahoma, CR 556, P. 2nd, 1063, 1976. In other words, if the ordinary man on the street cannot understand the law, then that law is probably unconstitutional. And how could you expect anyone to obey it if they could not even understand what it means? How can the law relating to the FCC be understood? The answer lies, among other places, in the definitions of words contained in the law itself. Words contained in law can have meanings other than those commonly understood, as long as those definitions are part of the law. Therefore, green can be defined as blue, as long as that definition is contained in the law, and this is all perfectly legal. Since 47 United States Code, Section 151, uses the phrase interstate and foreign commerce, then we will adhere to that definition, as it is different from the definition of interstate commerce. 47 United States Code, Section 152, Application of Chapter 5, small a. The provisions of this chapter shall apply to all interstate and foreign communication by wire or radio, and all interstate and foreign transmission of energy by radio, which originates and or is received within the United States, and to all persons engaged within the United States in such communication or such transmission of energy by radio, and to the licensing and regulating of all radio stations as hereinafter provided. Small b. Except as provided in sections 223 through 227 and section 332, and subject to the provisions of section 310 and subchapter V-A of this chapter. Nothing in this chapter shall be construed to apply or to give the Commission jurisdiction with respect to 1. Charges, classifications, practices, services, facilities, or regulations for or in connection with intrastate communication service by wire or radio. Now that's pretty clear, isn't it? The section I just read seems clear enough. 47 United States Code, Chapter 5, applies only to interstate, between states, and foreign matters, and not to intrastate, which means within a state matters. Notice, however, the word except in small b, except as provided in the sections mentioned in small b, deal with the following. Section 223, obscene or harassing phone calls, telephone calls. And folks, that's why we're ultimately going to get this clown that we call Poopy Diapers, who sometimes tries to disrupt our broadcasting. And not just us, but many others across the country. Section 224, pole attachments, connecting wires, etc., to utility poles. Section 225, telecommunications services for hearing impaired and speech impaired individuals. Section 226, telephone operator services. Section 227, restrictions on use of telephone equipment. Section 332, mobile services such as car phones. Section 301, license for radio communication or transmission of energy. And subchapter V-A, cable communications. Only section 301 deals with radio, and its pertinent sections read as follows. 47 United States Code, section 301, license for radio communication or transmission of energy. It is the purpose of this chapter, among other things, to maintain the control of the United States over all the channels of radio transmission, but not the ownership thereof. No person shall use or operate any apparatus for the transmission of energy for communications or signals by radio, small a, from one place in any state, territory, or possession of the United States, or in the District of Columbia, to another place in the same state, territory, possession, or district, or small b, from any state, territory, or possession of the United States, or from the District of Columbia to any other state, territory, or possession of the United States, or small c, from any place in any state, territory, or possession of the United States, or in the District of Columbia, to any place in any foreign country, or to any vessel, or small d, within any state, when the effects of such use extend beyond the borders of said state, except under and in accordance with this chapter, and with a license in that behalf granted under the provisions of this chapter. That's also very clear. This section is one that is pointed to by many ham radio operators who proudly proclaim they have complied with the law by working so hard to obtain their amateur radio license. But if they had carefully read this statute, they would have discovered what appears on the surface to be a glaring contradiction. If the purpose of the FCC is to regulate interstate and foreign commerce, and the provisions of 47 U.S.C. Chapter 5 apply to all interstate and foreign communication and not intrastate communication, then how can a person be forbidden to broadcast from one place in any state to another place in the same state without first being granted a license? The key to understanding Section 301, ladies and gentlemen, lies in the definitions found in Section 153 and an understanding of the word includes. 47 U.S.C. Section 153 definitions, small e. Interstate communication or interstate transmission means communication or transmission, one, from any state, territory, or possession of the United States other than the Canal Zone or the District of Columbia, two, from or to the United States, to or from the Canal Zone, insofar as such communication or transmission takes place within the United States, or three, between points within the United States, but through a foreign country, but shall not, with respect to the provisions of Chapter 11 of this chapter, other than Section 223 of this title, include wire or radio communication between points in the same state, territory, or possession of the United States, or the District of Columbia, through any place outside thereof, if such communication is regulated by a state commission. CC, station license. Radio station license, or license, means that instrument of authorization required by this chapter, or the rules and regulations of the commission made pursuant to this chapter. Why the authors of this statute used the word means in one place and the word includes in others remains a mystery. However, they do have distinctly different definitions which must be understood in order to unravel the purpose of the law. And then, once you understand that, it's no mystery at all. The question is, how can a person be forbidden to broadcast from one place in any state to another place in the same state? 47 United States Code, Section 153, definitions, small g. United States means the several states and territories, the District of Columbia, and the possessions of the United States, but does not include the Canal Zone. Note the use of the word means here. Since Black's contains no pertinent definition of the word, we will turn to Webster's. Means, usage 2, 1. To have in mind as a purpose, intend, usage 2, to serve, to convey, show, or indicate, signify, If United States means the several states, does it mean Texas or Ohio? Does it mean the several states of the Union? 47 United States Code, Section 153, definitions, small v, state, includes the District of Columbia and the territories and possessions. Does small v contain the word Texas or Ohio? No, it most definitely does not. But one might say, aren't Texas and Ohio states? Doesn't this definition include them by inference, along with the other 48 several states of the Union? The answer, once again, and this is why some people get so confused in the law, is they think the definitions of words are the same as the definitions they use in their everyday life. The answer is a resounding no. Let us examine the words include and includes. According to Blacks, include, Latin, includere, to shut in, to keep within, to confine within, hold as in an enclosure, take in, attain, shut up, contain, enclose, comprise, comprehend, embrace, involve. Term may, according to context, express an enlargement and have the meaning of, and, or in addition to, or merely specify a particular thing already included within general words theretofore used, including. Within statute is interpreted as a word of enlargement or of illustrative application as well as a word of limitation. Remember, the law is based upon the meaning of words in Latin. This definition may surprise the novice researcher, who may also argue that the term should be interpreted as an enlargement. This must, however, be done according to context and with a different intention apparent. From the Legal Thesaurus, Deluxe Edition by William C. Burton, Macmillan Publishing Company, include, verb, absorb, Latin, adscribere, be composed of, be formed of, be made up of, be gird, boast, bound, bracket, circumscribe, classify, close in, combine, compass, Latin, complecti, comprehend, Latin. Comprehendere, consist of, consolidate, contain, cover, embody, embrace, encircle, encompass, engird, envelop, girdle, hold, incorporate, involve, merge, put a barrier around, span, subsume, surround, take in, unify, and unite. And from A Dictionary of Modern Legal Usage, second edition, by Brian A. Garner, Oxford University Press, included, see including. Including is sometimes misused for namely, but it should not be used to introduce an exhaustive list, for it implies that the list is only partial. In the words of one federal court, it is Hornbook law that the use of the word including indicates that the specified list is illustrative, not exclusive. See including but not limited to. Now, including but not limited to, including without limitation, in drafting these cautious phrases are often essential to defeat three canons of construction, Latin, inclusio unius est exclusio alterius, or to express one thing is to exclude the other, Latin, noscitur est socius, it is known by its associates, and Latin, est justum generis, are of the same class or nature. Even though the word including itself means that the list is merely exemplary and not exhaustive, the courts have not invariably held so. So the longer, more explicit variations may be considered necessary. Note that the definition in 47 U.S. Code, United States Code, Section 153, does not use the word including as a term of enlargement, but rather uses the more limiting word includes. In the absence of an apparently different intention, and based upon some understanding of the rules of construction of law, it is the conclusion of this author that there is no contradiction between Section 301 and Section 151 and 152 because the definition of state, capital S, in 47 United States Code does not include Texas, Ohio, Kansas, or any of the other several states of the Union. In the context of 47 United States Code and the FCC, the United States includes only the District of Columbia and the territories and possession of the United States. This brings up an interesting situation in which it can be argued that interstate and foreign commerce and communication or transmission takes place only among the District of Columbia and the territories and possessions. Therefore, commerce, communication, or transmission between someone in Texas and someone in Kansas is not interstate. This may, however, be pushing the legal envelope a bit and should for now be considered only as icing on what appears to be a well-defined cake. Conclusion of Part 1. The FCC exists solely to regulate interstate and foreign commerce. That is, commerce between states and other states and our countries, pertaining to low-power radio broadcasters and stations, 47 U.S.C. Chapter 5, applies only to interstate and foreign communication or transmission and clearly does not apply to commerce, communication, or transmissions taking place solely within the confines of one of the several states of the Union. And why is it that nobody's interested in looking this stuff up? Why is it that everybody just goes along with everything that they're told without question? Well, this might be the answer.
Do you suppose we'll meet any wild animals?
We might. Animals that eat straw? Some, but mostly lions and tigers and bears.
Lions?
And tigers?
And bears.
Lions and tigers and bears? Oh, my!
Lions and tigers and bears!
IRS, BATF, FCC, IRS, BATF, FCC, IRS, BATF, FCC.
I'll fight you with one poor tie behind my back. I'll fight to stand on one foot. I'll fight you with my eyes closed. Oh, pulling an axe on me, eh? Sneaking up on me, eh? Why?
Here. Go away and let us alone.
Oh, scared, huh? Afraid, huh? How long do you stay fresh in that can? Come on, get up and fight, you shivering junkyard. Put your hands up, you lopsided bag of hay.
Now, that's getting personal, Lion.
Yes. Get up and teach them a lesson.
Well, what's wrong with you teaching them?
Well, I hardly know them.
Well, I'll get you anyway, Pee-wee. What did you do that for? I didn't buy them.
No, but you tried to. It's bad enough picking on a straw man, but when you go around picking on poor little dogs.
Well, you didn't have to go and hit me, did you?
You see what happens, folks. As long as you're afraid, you are the victim. But the minute you find out that the lion has no teeth and no claws, you don't have to be a victim anymore. That movie's telling the world an old bunch of things that nobody even pays attention to. You think it's a child's movie. Well, it's not. You'd better go rent it from the local video store and watch it this time with your brain. Because there are some fantastic messages there that you can use, really, in your everyday life. Here's part two. Bearing in mind that 47 U.S.C. Section 151 grants the FCC authority with respect to interstate and foreign commerce in wire and radio communication, the rest of the law begins to fall in place and makes sense, in particular, Section 303, Powers and Duties of Commission. 47 U.S.C. Section 303 describes the various rulemaking and regulation-making powers of the FCC, and certain provisions of this section are often quoted by the FCC in attempting to inspect, fine, seize, or otherwise shut down what they call, quote, violators, end quote. However, it's all done without due process of law. And the very first sentence of this section should leap off the page to the broadcaster who knows and understands his rights and legal standing. 47 United States Code, Section 303, Powers and Duties of Commission, except as otherwise provided in this chapter. That sentence sets everything that follows into the context of interstate and foreign commerce, including the dreaded Section 303, small n, which the FCC, operating under color of law, uses as its alleged authority to conduct warrantless searches against the Constitution for the United States of America, which clearly prohibits such things. 47 United States Code, Section 303, small n, have authority to inspect all radio stations associated with stations, and listen very closely, required to be licensed. What stations are required to be licensed? Why, those engaged in interstate and foreign commerce. The FCC has no authority to inspect any other facility, period. And it's highly questionable, considering that Article 4 of the Bill of Rights prohibits any kind of search or inspection without a proper warrant. As defined in Article 4 of the Bill of Rights. It is important to examine other statutory provisions adding to the FCC's limited authority found as follows. 47 Code of Federal Regulations, Section 0.405, small b. The Commission exercises authority under the Submarine Cable Landing Act, 42 Statutes at Large, 8, 47 United States Code, 34 through 39. The Submarine Cable Landing Act and 47 United States Code, Sections 34 through 39, deal with submarine, in effect, underwater cables, directly or indirectly connecting the United States with any foreign country. Note the definition given in Section 38. 47 United States Code, Section 38, United States defined. The term United States, as used in Sections 34 through 39 of this title, includes the canal zone and all territory, continental or insular, subject to the jurisdiction of the United States of America. Period. According to Blacks, territory, a portion of the United States, not within the limits of any state, which has not yet been admitted as a state of the Union, but is organized with a separate legislature and with executive and judicial officers appointed by the President. It is also interesting to note that 47 United States Code, Sections 34 through 39, are not listed in the parallel table of authorities and rules of the Code of Federal Regulations Index. And we will cover the significance of that omission later, for it is of paramount importance. Another area where the FCC exercises authority is listed as follows. 47 CFR, Section 0.405, small c. The Commission exercises authority under the Communications Satellite Act of 1962, 76 Statutes at Large, 419, August 31, 1962, 47 United States Code, 701 through 744. The Communications Satellite Act of 1962 and 47 United States Code, Section 701 through 744, describe participation of the United States in the form of a private corporation in a vast commercial communications satellite system as part of an improved global communications network. However, this act, along with the Submarine Cable Act, appears to contain nothing applicable to low-power intrastate broadcasting. Of note is the fact that Section 721, Implementation of Policy, which contains FCC functions, including rule and regulation making, is not listed in the Code of Federal Regulation, Parallel Tables and Authorities and of Authorities and Rules. 47 CFR Section 0.405, small d, the Commission operates under the Administrative Procedure Act. This section lists sections of five United States Code which cover definitions, publication in the Federal Register, the Freedom of Information Act, rulemaking, adjudications, court proceedings, hearings, sanctions, licenses, judicial review, relief, administrative law judges, government employees, and other administrative procedure matters which all federal agencies must observe. None of these sections shed any additional light on the authority and jurisdiction of the FCC relating to low-power intrastate broadcasting. 47 United States Code, Section 401, Enforcement Provisions. Small a, jurisdiction. The district courts of the United States shall have jurisdiction to issue a writ or writs of mandamus commanding such person to comply with the provisions of this chapter. Small b, if any person fails or neglects to obey any order of the commission may apply to the appropriate district court of the United States for the enforcement of such order. The court shall enforce obedience. The FCC has no authority whatsoever to command compliance or enforce obedience. That authority lies solely with the district courts of the United States, meaning that all of their illegal, warrantless searches, seizure of property and equipment, and levying of what they call fees or fines due to an, quote, apparent violation, end quote, are unlawful, unconstitutional, and without authority or jurisdiction. 47 United States Code, Section 401, Enforcement Provisions, small c, duty to prosecute. Upon the request of the Commission, it shall be the duty of any United States attorney to whom the Commission may apply to institute in the proper court and to prosecute under the direction of the Attorney General of the United States all necessary proceedings for the enforcement of the provisions of this chapter. The FCC has no authority to institute court proceedings. That duty lies with, quote, any United States attorney under the direction of the Attorney General, end quote, to whom the, quote, commission may apply, end quote. It is a little known fact that you too may apply to any United States attorney to institute court proceedings. The conclusion of Part 2. The authority and our jurisdiction of the FCC is limited to regulating interstate and foreign commerce. The FCC only has authority to inspect radio installations which are, quote, required to be licensed, end quote. In effect, those engaged in, quote, interstate and foreign commerce, end quote. The FCC has no authority to institute court proceedings or to command compliance with or enforce the law in any way whatsoever. Part 3. The Parallel Table of Authorities and Rules, and you better pay dear attention to this, folks. To quote Patrick E. Kehoe, Professor of Law, Director of the Law Library at the American University in Washington, D.C., in the foreword to the Code of Federal Regulations Index, I quote, in 1936, Congress passed legislation setting up the Federal Register and decreeing that any regulation issued by a federal agency authorized either by Congress or the President must appear in it in order for the regulation to have binding legal effect. In 1937, Congress, recognizing the obvious need for a subject-based codification of current regulations, enacted further legislation establishing the Code of Federal Regulations. The CFR is a specialized publication which is meant to include only those regulations which are considered to be of general effect. The CFR is by law considered to be prima facie correct statement of any regulation which it includes. According to the CFR Index and Finding Aids, revised as of January 1, 1996, as a special edition of the Federal Register, the PTAR of the CFR lists the rulemaking authority, except for 5 United States Code, Section 301, for regulations codified in the CFR. Entries in the table are taken directly from the rulemaking authority citation provided by federal agencies in their regulations. To quote legal researcher Dan Metter, quote, Congress, as the legislative body for the United States, operates in at least two distinct capacities. First, Congress legislates for the state republics partly to the Constitution within the framework of constitutionally delegated authorities. Second, Congress legislates for the self-interested United States, the geographical United States, exclusive of the state republics. Any given law Congress enacts vests administrative authority in a cabinet officer or board or commission in charge of whatever the legislation applies to. The officer or entity vested with original authority must then facilitate legislation with regulations. If regulations are published in the Federal Register, the statute or statutes the regulations facilitate can or do apply to the population at large and or the state's party to the Constitution. If any given regulation is not published in the Federal Register, the nation's legal newspaper, it does not apply to the population at large or the state republics. It applies only to federal agencies and officers, agents, and employees of federal agencies, allowing for other applications within exclusively United States jurisdiction, District of Columbia, U.S.-owned territories, and insular possessions and federal enclaves. Authorities confirming necessity of regulations. Application determined by 5 U.S. Code, Section 552, et sec., and 44 United States Code, Section 1501, et sec., 44 United States Code, Section 1505, small a, specifies that when regulations are not published in the Federal Register, application as to federal agencies and officers, agents, and employees of federal agencies. Application is to federal agencies and officers, agents, and employees of federal agencies. I hope you're understanding what you're hearing. If not, if you recorded this or took good notes, then you can go back and review it. Sections that have no regulations are mandatory and are enforceable only in the federal United States, inclusive of the District of Columbia and United States-owned territories. The necessity for regulations was emphasized by the United States Supreme Court in California Bankers Association versus Schultz, 416 United States Supreme Court, 21-26-94, S Court, 1494, 1539, L. Ed. 2nd, 812, 1974. Because it has a bearing on our treatment of some of the issues raised by the parties, we think it important to note that the Act's civil and criminal penalties attach only upon violation of regulations promulgated by the Secretary. If the Secretary were to do nothing, the Act itself would impose no penalties on anyone. Quote, it is a well-established principle of law that all federal legislation applies only within the territorial jurisdiction of the federal United States unless a contrary intent appears. End quote. Foley Brothers v. Pilardo, 336 United States Supreme Court, 281, 1949. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, where the several states and the general population are concerned, a statute created by act of Congress is somewhat like a hot air balloon that won't get off the ground until someone pumps in hot air. Regulations are to statutes as hot air is to the balloon, as stated in 44 U.S.C.S. Section 1505, small a, 1, if regulations for any given statute aren't published in the Federal Register, application is limited to federal agencies or persons in their capacity as officers, agents, or employees of federal agencies. Fortunately, there is a reasonably easy way to discern what statutes in the United States Code have general application to the several states and the population at large. This is through the parallel table of authorities and rules. Its authority is located at 1 CFR section 8.5 small a. Small a, parallel tables of statutory authorities and rules. In the Code of Federal Regulations, index or at some other place as the director of the Federal Register considers appropriate, numerical lists of all sections of the current edition of the United States Code, except section 301 of Title V, which are cited by issuing agencies as rulemaking authority for currently effective regulations in the Code of Federal Regulations. The lists shall be arranged in the order of the titles and sections of the United States Code with parallel citations to the pertinent titles and parts of the Code of Federal Regulations. End quote. This handy finding aid lists United States Code statutes by title and section in the left column. If implementing regulations have been published in the Federal Register, and applicable regulations by title and part in the right. If the statute does not appear, it does not have implementing regulations which have been published in the Federal Register, signifying that in accordance with 44 United States Code Service, section 1505 small a1 provisions, the statute is applicable only to federal agencies or the officers, agents, and employees of federal agencies. If the statute number does not appear and a regulation is cited, the regulation must be consulted to determine application. What does all of this mean, ladies and gentlemen? It means that statutes from the United States Code, which do not have implementing regulations, have absolutely no legal effect on the population at large, period, end of subject. All of the sections from 47 United States Code, Chapter 5, Wire or Radio Communication, which have no implementing regulations that appear in the parallel table of authorities and regulations are, and I'm going to read them off to you right now, Section 157, New Technologies and Services, Section 159, Regulatory Fees, Section 213, Valuation of Property of Carrier, Section 214, Extension of Lines or Discontinuance of Service, Section 216, Receivers and Trustees, Application of Chapter, Section 217, Agents, Acts, and Omissions, Liability of Carrier. Section 222, Competition among Record Carriers. Section 223, Obscene or Harassing Telephone Calls. Which means that if we get Mr. Poopy Diapers, we'll get him because the FCC wants to exercise this regulation under the color of law. But in truth, if Mr. Poopy Diapers is smart, he'll have the defense that it has no jurisdiction over him, no effect or jurisdiction over the general population. But you see, he doesn't express that kind of intelligence, nor does he express the kind of intelligence which would enable him to mount any kind of defense in a court of law. Section 224, poll attachments. Section 226, telephone operator services. Section 228, regulation of carrier offering pay-per-call services. Section 306, foreign ships, application of Section 301. Section 320, stations liable to interfere with distress signals. Section 321, distress signals in communications. Section 322, exchanging radio communications. Section 323, interference between government and commercial stations. Section 324, use of minimum power. Section 326, censorship. Section 327, naval stations. Section 328, Canal Zone, representation by Secretary of State. Section 329, administration of radio laws and territories and possessions. Section 331, allocation of very high frequency television stations and AM radio stations. Section 333, willful or malicious interference. Section 335, direct broadcast satellite service obligations. Section 351, ship radio stations and operations. Section 353, radio equipment and operators. Section 353, small a, operators and watches on radio telephone equipped ships. Section 354, technical requirements. Section 354, small a, technical requirements. Section 355, survival craft. Section 356, approval of installations by commission. Section 357, safety information. Section 358, master's control over operations. Section 359, certificates of compliance. Section 361, control by commission. Section 362, forfeitures, recovery. Section 381, vessels transporting more than six passengers. Section 382, vessels accepted. Section 384, authority of commission. Section 386, forfeitures. Section 395, assistance. Section 401, enforcement provisions. Section 402, judicial review. Section 406, compelling furnishing of facilities. Section 407, order for payment of money. Petition for enforcement procedure. Order of commission as prima facie evidence, costs, attorney's fees. Section 408, order not for payment of money. Section 411, joinder of parties. Section 413, designation of agent for service. Section 414, exclusiveness of chapter. Section 415, limitations of actions. Section 416, orders of commission. Section 501, general penalty. Section 502, violation of rules, regulations, etc. Section 503, forfeitures. Section 504, forfeitures. Section 505, venue of trials. Section 506, repeal. Section 507, violation of Great Lakes Agreement. Section 508, disclosure of payments to individuals connected with broadcasts. Section 509, prohibited practices. Section 510, forfeiture of communications devices. Section 521, purposes. Section 522, definitions. Section 534, carriage of local commercial television signals. Section 537, sales of cable systems. Section 541, general franchise requirements. Section 545, modification of franchise obligations. Section 546, renewal. Section 547, condition of sale. Section 551, protection of subscriber privacy. Section 553, unauthorized reception of cable service. Section 555, judicial proceedings. Section 555, small a, limitation of franchising authority liability. Section 556, coordination of federal, state, and local authority. Section 557, existing franchises. Section 558, criminal and civil liability. Section 559, obscene programming. Section 601, Interstate Commerce Commission and Postmaster General, duties, powers, and functions transferred to commission. Section 603. Section 605, unauthorized publication or use of communications. Section 607, effective date of chapter. Section 608, separability. Section 609, short title. Section 610, telephone service for disabled. Section 611, closed captioning of public service announcements. Section 612, syndicated exclusivity. And Section 613, discrimination. The astute researcher, however, will notice from the parallel tables of authorities and regulations that all sections from 301 to 609 are covered with a blanket of regulations found in 47 CFR Parts 80, 87, and 97. However, ladies and gentlemen, 47 CFR 80, 87, and 97 deal only with, quote, the conditions under which radio may be licensed and used in the maritime services, end quote. Quote, the conditions under which radio stations may be licensed and used in the aviation services, end quote, and, quote, to provide an amateur radio service, end quote, none of which extend any FCC authority or jurisdiction over intrastate broadcasters. Amateur. or as they are commonly known, ham operators, may be particularly chagrined to learn that they volunteer to be regulated by the FCC by submitting to examination according to 47 CFR 97.5, titled, quote, Station License Required, end quote. Quote, any person who qualifies by examination, end quote, is, quote, qualified to be an amateur operator, end quote, and therefore, quote, must have been granted a station license of the type listed in paragraph small b before the station may transmit on any amateur service frequency, end quote. You see, a person qualifies by examination, is granted a license, and therefore submits to being regulated. Those who do not submit to examination are not required to be licensed, and unless engaged in, quote, interstate and foreign commerce, are not subject to regulation. I love it. I just love it. Let me take a little breather here, folks, because I sorely need one. Let's go back here to this, and I'll be back after this short pause. He said your request to become licensed and controlled is approved. That's what he said. What's the matter with you? Can't you hear? Conclusion of part three. If any given regulation is not published in the Federal Register, it does not apply to the population at large or the state republics. Sections that have no regulations are mandatory and are enforceable only in the federal United States, inclusive of the District of Columbia and U.S.-owned territories. No implementing regulations exist for sections of 47 United States Code relating to, among other items, enforcement provisions, orders for payment of money, penal provisions, penalties, violation of rules or regulations, forfeitures or trials, which apply to broadcasters not engaged in, quote, interstate and foreign commerce, end quote. Those statutes apply only to those involved in, quote, interstate and foreign commerce, end quote. Federal agencies are persons in their capacity as officers, agents, or employees thereof, those in the maritime or aviation services, or those who have volunteered to be regulated by submitting to FCC examination and qualification. A much popularized situation exists in Berkeley, California, in which the FCC is attempting to prosecute Stephen Dunifer, a low-power broadcaster, operating a station called Radio Free Berkeley. And we're going to talk about that on Monday, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, I want you to listen very carefully to what you're going to hear. This is the Occult History of the Third Reich, Part 1. If you listen carefully, and if you have a brain, you will notice similarities between what happened in Germany and what is happening in the United States of America today. You will also notice that very much of it is exactly the same thing. So pay close attention and understand this. The Nazis were socialists. The same New Age religion that is rearing its ugly head today reared its ugly head in Germany in the 1930s and all through World War II.
Nazi Germany, 1936. A state which will sterilize, enslave, and systematically murder millions of men, women, and children. Entire peoples are to be swept from the face of the planet. Whole populations are to be scientifically reduced, those who remain preserved only for their value as slaves. The world is to be subject to a new order. Foreign observers of 1930s Germany, National Socialism is an enigma. No conventional political explanation seems sufficient to account for such an alien phenomenon. A whole world of strange rituals and beliefs seems to have risen from nowhere to mesmerize millions of Germans. Over the whole extraordinary spectacle of pageantry and military might presides the messianic figure of Adolf Hitler. And everywhere there is a mysterious and ever-present symbol, the emblem of the swastika. Rallies at Nuremberg consummate the mystical unity of the party, the people, and their leader. The climax of the Nuremberg rally is a mass display of up to 32,000 swastikas. A foreign reporter finds himself overawed by the force of the spectacle he is witnessing. Hitler, he writes, is restoring pageantry and mysticism to the drab lives of the 20th century. The rally has the mystical and religious fervor of an Easter mass in a great Gothic cathedral. The ranks of the Hitler Youth sing of their newfound faith. No evil priest can prevent us from feeling that we are the children of Hitler. Away with incense and holy water. The swastika brings salvation on earth. The symbol of the swastika will win the devotion of millions. Its rise will chart the growth of a strange and terrifying creed. The doctrine of National Socialism. A doctrine born in the world of the occult. The mission of Aryan man. The mystery of the blood. The soul of the race. These dogmas, fundamental to the Nazi vision, will lead Europe into the realms of nightmare. Their symbol is the swastika. The swastika was adopted by the Nazi Party in 1920, but it was neither the party's invention nor its discovery. Since the end of the 19th century, the swastika had been spreading amongst the peoples of Europe. And everywhere, it was a sign of a new and powerful force, a deepening fascination with the arcane, the esoteric, and the occult. The revival of the occult in Europe has its roots deep in the trauma of the Industrial Revolution. By the dawn of the 20th century, the lives of millions have been changed out of all recognition. Cities, the traditional centers of commerce and fashionable life, have been transformed into sprawling industrial slums. Yet, everywhere, the catchphrase is progress. There is a widespread belief that a new world is coming. A world in which the ills of the past will be cured by science, by technology, and by democracy. Many, far from welcoming the dawn of a new age, are deeply disturbed. With the Industrial Revolution had come a decline in the power of traditional authority. The political power of the landowner is waning in favor of a new class of industrialists and financiers. Hierarchy is being threatened by democracy. It appears to many as if the world of beauty and order is disintegrating before their very eyes. Worst of all, religion itself seems in mortal danger. Cherished beliefs, accepted as true for all time, are being questioned by science. the ancient Himalayan kingdom of Tibet. From the late 19th century, Tibet is the mysterious and forbidding destination of a steady stream of travelers from the industrialized world. Many, disillusioned with the certainties of science, come in search of another deeper knowledge. One such traveler is a Russian adventuress and self-proclaimed telepath, Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. In 1888, Madame Blavatsky publishes a book, The Secret Doctrine, in which she claims that deep in an underground Himalayan monastery, she has been shown an ancient occult text. In it were revealed the mystical secrets of the universe and the future course of human history. In The Secret Doctrine, Madame Blavatsky describes the universe as having fallen from pure spirit into base matter, darkness, and chaos. But soon it will rise once more to reach the pinnacle of spirituality. Madame Blavatsky claims that this knowledge and more she has learned through initiation into the mysteries of 7 esoteric symbols. Of these 7 symbols, one she believes to be more potent than any other. The symbol is the swastika. In Tibetan mythology, the swastika is the sign of Agni, the god of the sun, of fire, and of creation. And always, whether clockwise or anti-clockwise, whether curved or straight-armed, it is the symbol of good fortune. For Madame Blavatsky, each cycle of creation has associated with it 7 stages of human evolution. Stages she calls root races. The race which will begin once more, the ascent from darkness to the light of the spirit she names Aryan. In the occult teachings of Madame Blavatsky, the sign of the Aryan is the swastika. The Nuremberg Rally of 1934 has as its theme a mystical concept. The triumph of the will. Homage is paid to a fundamental dogma in the Nazi creed of the swastika. Pure will, the expression of the soul of the race, will overcome the forces of darkness and of chaos. In the world of National Socialism, the race of light, of order, and of the spirit is the Aryan race. Decades before the swastika was adopted by the Nazi Party, a periodical published in Germany by an American occult society became the first German publication to carry a swastika on its cover. The society's founder was Madame Helena Blavatsky. It would be the followers of Madame Blavatsky who would introduce to the peoples of Germany and Austria the occult doctrine of the Aryan. The Prussian-Austrian War of 1866 had left German-speaking Austrians an isolated minority in a predominantly Slavic Austria-Hungary. By the early 20th century, an intense longing has grown for unification with Germany. Hundreds of German-Austrian societies are founded, committed to the romantic revival of ancient Germanic mythology. A folk federation with a membership of over 100,000, calling itself the Germanenbund, holds festivals, founds a Germanic calendar, revives ancient rituals, and appeals for unity in a new spiritual German nationhood. The Germanenbund was inspired by the writings of an Austrian mystic. Guido von Liszt, born in Vienna in 1848. Claimed to have psychic visions of the past in which he was initiated into the secrets of the ancient Teutonic tribes. List's visions told him of a Germanic religion, the worship of the god Wotan. His dream is to rediscover the occult heritage of its long-vanished priesthood. According to Norse legend, the god-magician Wotan, leader of the dead heroes of Valhalla, had won by suffering a priceless store of esoteric knowledge. He had discovered the secret of the runes. List knew that the runes were the alphabet of a primitive system of writing. But to Germanic peoples from the 2nd century to the Middle Ages, they were also magical symbols. Symbols which List believed possessed a deep esoteric meaning. Far, the rune of wealth, wandering and destruction. The rune of wild oxen, regeneration and sacrifice. North, the compulsion of fate. Seed, the rune of the sun and of victory. To Guido von List, runes were the key to the occult knowledge of the ancient Germanic peoples. Within a decade of his death in 1919, the runes were to become elements in a new language, the language of National Socialism. The Sieg Victory Rune, emblem of the Hitler Youth. The Double Sieg, emblem of the Schutzstaffel, the SS. The Apple Rune, symbol of Richard Walter Dahre's Ministry of Agriculture, the rune of inheritance, the rune of German soil. The Man Rune, the rune of death, which in time will replace the cross in the graveyards of the SS. Study of the runes is required of all SS officers. Of the many strange and mystical symbols which have found a place in the new order of National Socialism, one dominates all others. Guido von List called the swastika the twice-high holy secret of constant generation. He recounts a Nordic tale in which the god Mundel Fiore whisks the cosmos into being. The swastika is the fires, the very act of creating. A Nazi hymn proclaimed, "The time of the cross is gone now. The sun wisp shall arise. And so with God we shall be free at last and gift our people back their honor." By 1909, the occult visions of Guido von List had made him famous throughout the German-speaking lands. To List, every stream, hill, and forest in Austria was associated with a Germanic god or spirit. In the devices of heraldic shields, in the beams of Austrian houses, in folk customs and rituals, List claimed to see evidence that Austria was and always had been part of the German homeland. For two generations, German-speaking Austrians had looked to Germany for reassurance and a sense of identity. But events were about to occur which would place in doubt the very future of the fatherland itself. 1914, the Great War. For the first time in history, the might of industry is unleashed on the battlefield. nothing could have prepared the peoples of Europe for slaughter on such an unimaginable scale. As the war grinds on and casualties mount, frontline soldiers on both sides of No Man's Land take to the wearing of charms and amulets. In the ranks of Germans and Austrians, the most popular of all magic talismans is the swastika. The swastika medallions and amulets worn in the trenches of the Great War are based on the researches of Guido von List. By now, an influential and wealthy society devoted to the teachings of the master has already been formed in Vienna. It is the List Society, which supplies designs to the manufacturers of swastika talismans. The swastika, now spreading amongst the German armies, is fast becoming the emblem of militant German nationalism. But since 1908, it had acquired another, even more ominous meaning. Shortly before the outbreak of the Great War, List had incorporated the occult teachings of Madame Helena Blavatsky into his own German mythology. Now he no longer refers to ancient Germans or Teutons. Instead, the tribes who populate his visions he names Aryans. In Madame Blavatsky's writings, the Aryans are the race of upward spiritual evolution, the race whose sign is the swastika. In Hitler's Mein Kampf, the meaning of the swastika to the Nazi party is made clear. In the swastika, he writes, we see the mission for the struggle for the victory of Aryan man. By the 1930s and the great Nazi rallies at Nuremberg, the concept of the Aryan has become a cornerstone of the party's mystical ideology. The grand design for the Aryan state has already existed for over 20 years. Its author was Guido von List. In the slaughter and misery of the Great War, the writings of Guido von List assume greater and greater significance for the soldiers of the German and Austrian armies. To List, the Great War is the conflict which will purge the world of evil and herald a new age. Democracy and materialism will be destroyed on the battlefields of Europe. Victory will usher in an Aryo-German empire. By 1911, List had already described in detail his vision of the future Germanic state. It will be a strict hierarchy in which leaders will be obeyed without question. It will be patriarchal, with full rights only for the male heads of families. Only Aryans will be entitled to citizenship. There will be strict laws to ensure the purity of the race. Every family will keep a record of its ancestry as proof of its Aryan blood. By 1918, the conflict which List called the Holiest War had cost the lives of 2 million Germans. That same year, the German armies had won a series of military victories. The Russian enemy had collapsed, and yet Germany had sued for peace. To men who had suffered so much, it seems like a colossal betrayal. Then comes the greatest shock of all. The Kaiser is forced into exile. The terms imposed on Germany by the Treaty of Versailles are harsh and punitive. Key industrial regions must be handed over to the victors. The German army is to be reduced to a fraction of its former strength. Heavy reparations must be paid when war has already left the German economy on the verge of collapse. The Versailles Treaty will fatally undermine the authority of the new Weimar Republic. The ministers who signed its terms will become known as the November Criminals. As food supplies dwindle and a once proud nation is reduced to dependence and misery, Germany threatens to descend into anarchy. The infant Weimar Republic quickly becomes a battleground of warring factions. In the major cities, revolutionary socialist republics are declared by councils of workers and soldiers. Nationalists and monarchist groups muster private armies and mobilize for counter-revolution. Behind the factions on both sides is the hidden hand of conspiracy. Among the many shadowy groups organizing nationalist counter-revolution is the wealthy and powerful Thule Society. Thule is the Munich lodge of the nationalist and anti-Semitic German order. The German order is dedicated to the occult teachings of Guido von Liszt. On November the 9th, 1918, Rudolf von Sebottendorf, master of Thule, addresses a hastily convened meeting of the lodge. Socialist republics have been declared in both Munich and Berlin. Yesterday, we experienced the collapse of everything which is familiar, dear, and valuable to us. I am determined to pledge Thule to this struggle. Our God is Valvata. His rune is the Arun. The Arun signifies Aryan, primal fire, the sun, and the eagle. Thule will fight until the swastika rises victoriously out of the icy darkness. In the following months, along with other nationalist groups, Thule stockpiles weapons and trains volunteers. On April the 30th, 1919, 20,000 men, including strong detachments armed and led by Thule, storm Munich in a bloody counter-revolution. On the helmets of many nationalist volunteers is the emblem of the swastika. The success of Thule in the 1919 Munich counter-revolution would have far-reaching consequences for the Germany of the 1920s. A shadowy organization devoted to arcane rituals and the creation of an Aryan empire would attract support from the highest levels of German society. The secret German order, parent order of Thule, was founded in 1912. It was and would remain virulently anti-Semitic and anti-democratic. The membership of the Thule and of all the lodges of the German order is drawn from the ranks of aristocrats, industrialists, lawyers, judges, and medical men. All are required to prove that they and their spouses are of pure Aryan blood. Applicants must submit details of hair, eye, and skin color. Hair must be blonde to dark blonde. Eyes must be blue or light brown. The skin must be fair. For membership of the Berlin Lodge, even the shape of the skull is taken into account. By the autumn of 1918, Rudolf von Sebottendorf, master of the Thule Lodge, had attempted to extend the influence of Thule's ideas by secretly sponsoring the formation of a workers' discussion group. Unknown to most members of the group, its chairman, Karl Harrer, would belong to Thule. The most active member of the workers' group is the locksmith, Anton Drexler. By the end of 1918, Drexler had proposed that the workers' circle be formed into a new political party. The Thule chairman agreed. On January the 5th, 1919, the new party is formally founded in a Munich tavern, the Fürstenfelderhof. It is to be called the German Workers' Party. On September the 12th, 1919, 10 months after the foundation of the party, an army spy is sent by his superiors to attend one of its meetings. The spy is a 30-year-old Austrian war veteran. His name is Adolf Hitler. Within weeks, Hitler has joined the party, become a regular speaker at beer hall political meetings, and has been appointed to the party's steering committee. Within 4 months, the party has changed its name. It has become the National Socialist German Workers' Party. On the 20th, 1920, the swastika was formally adopted as the symbol of the new Nazi party. The form chosen, straight-armed and anti-clockwise, was chosen by Adolf Hitler himself. Until now, the nationalist swastika had no set direction. The swastika talismans of the Great War were vertical and tilted, clockwise and anti-clockwise. Hermann Göring, future chief of the German Air Force as a nationalist volunteer of 1919, wore a vertical anti-clockwise swastika. In the ranks of the nationalist counter-revolutionaries, both clockwise and anti-clockwise forms were commonplace. The curved swastika of Thule, chosen from the many popularized by Guido von Liszt, will not be forgotten by the party to which Thule gave birth. It will live on the belt buckles of the brown-shirted stormtroopers. The ceremonial swords of the Luftwaffe will bear the Thule swastika. Decorations for anti-partisan warfare on the Eastern Front will display the Thule dagger and the curved swastika. Whatever the form in which the swastika will appear in the banners and regalia of National Socialism, its meaning will remain the same. It is the meaning claimed for it by Madame Blavatsky and Guido von Liszt. It is the sign of creation, the sign of the mystical destiny of Aryan man. By the 1920s, the spread of Charles Darwin's theories of evolution has had a profound impact on nationalist consciousness. A new explanation for the differences between cultures and for the rise and fall of civilizations is now possible. Increasingly, laws of inheritance are believed to be the key to history. The artistic achievements of a nation, its courage in war, its temperament, even its spiritual life, are all believed to be the legacy of race. It is a belief that will culminate in the official Nazi doctrine that each race has its soul, and each soul its race. The myth of the Aryan, developed in the occult teachings of Madame Blavatsky and Guido von Liszt, has by the late 1920s spread throughout Europe, the United States, and Britain. And with it, fascination with the swastika. The Stories of India by the British author Rudyard Kipling appear emblazoned with the seal of the swastika. In Scotland, the discovery of swastika markings in the Pictish cave inspired the creation of the swastika kilspin. In the United States, costly earrings and brooches appear in the form of the swastika. During the Great War, the British War Savings Drive has a swastika as its official emblem. Its administrators are awarded swastika lapel badges in recognition of their services to the nation. By 1930, members of the British Druidic cults display swastikas on their ceremonial robes. In 1932, an English periodical appears with the title The Superman. It is devoted to physical culture, and on its cover is a border of swastikas. The Superman, as well as features on sport and health, carries articles by respected British scientists, warning of the racial contamination of Saxon Britain.
25, das kann nicht anders sein. Denn ihr seid Fleisch. Und unser Fleisch und Blut, und unser Blut. Und in euren jungen Gehirn brennt derselbe Geist, der uns beherrscht. Ihr könnt nicht anders sein. Als mit uns verbunden. Und wenn die großen Kolonnen unserer Bewegung heute siegen durch Deutschland agieren, dann weiß ich, ihr schließt euch den Kolonnen an. Und wir wissen, vor uns liegt Deutschland, in uns marschiert Deutschland und hinter uns. Komm, Deutschland!
Of 1934. The Führer, addressing the massed ranks of the Hitler Youth, speaks of Germany, of the blood, and of the continuity of the race. In the coming year, a series of new German laws will be signed into existence by Adolf Hitler. The first Reich law of citizenship will divide the people of Germany into two classes. Those of pure Aryan blood will be full citizens of the Reich. Non-Aryans will be reduced to mere subjects of the state. A second law, the law for the protection of German blood and German honor, will forbid pure-blooded Aryans from marrying people of Jewish descent. Soon after, the measure will be extended to forbid intermarriage between Aryans and all non-Aryans. The Germanic vision of Guido von Liszt is becoming a reality. In 1935, a foundation is established in what is now National Socialist Germany. The Allerneub is the ancestral heritage society for the study of German prehistory. Its official task is to investigate the territorial extent and spirit of the Nordic Indo-Germanic race. The Allerneub will grow to over 50 departments, controlling all archaeology in the Third Reich. By 1937, it will be the research branch of the SS. Allerneub researchers dispatched to Tibet, South America, Greece, and Rome conclude that all were once populated by great Aryan civilizations. The work of the Amanerb will reinforce what are already deeply held beliefs. Civilization and everything that is valuable are products of the Aryan soul. The way is open for Adolf Hitler to claim, if we divide the human race into three categories, founders, maintainers, and destroyers of culture, the Aryan stock alone can be considered to represent the first category. Munich, 1937. National Socialism celebrates the history of the Aryans and the sacred mystery of the swastika. The solemn ritual has been organized by Alfred Rosenberg, official ideologist of the party and one-time associate of the Thule Society. Today, Rosenberg proclaims, a new mythos is dawning, the mythos of the blood, the belief that the godly essence of man himself is to be defended through the blood. The Nordic race represents the mysterium which has overthrown and replaced the old sacraments. Already in the rituals of the Hitler Youth, the Christian Gospels have been replaced by readings from Mein Kampf. In the League of German Maidens, the compulsory youth organization for girls, the religious rites of a mythical Aryan past are reenacted. The sun-wisped swastika is carried in procession. The loom of fate and destiny of Nordic legend is woven once more. By 1939, the very word Christmas has been banned from official use. In children's books, there are no references to Christ, to angels, or to shepherds. Instead, there are emissaries of nature and the power of the sun. Concerted efforts are being made to convert Christmas into a festival of light. In the National Socialist calendar, the summer solstice has become an official holy day. The swastika is revered as the sign of the sun and of creation. Ceremonial fires are lit all over the Reich. In nocturnal rituals, fire incantations are recited by the assembled worshippers of the new Nordic faith. The consecration of the blood flag. On the 9th of November 1923, the fledgling National Socialist Workers' Party, led by Hitler, attempted to overthrow the government of Bavaria. In a Munich street, their advancing ranks were met by a volley of police gunfire. 16 are killed, including the stormtrooper marching beside Hitler. In the chaos, the swastika flag, carried in the front rank of marchers, is knocked to the ground and drenched in blood. The blood flag, entrusted to the guardianship of the SS, becomes the most sacred relic of the Nazi Party. All new party banners must be consecrated by contact with the original blood flag. We do not want to have any other god, only Germany, proclaims Adolf Hitler. And in the doctrine of National Socialism, Germany is the race. Already the priesthood of the Aryan Empire of the future is in the process of creation. It is to come from the mystical brotherhood of the SS. The SS, first created as the personal bodyguard of the Führer, will become a state within a state. Its members are chosen as the most perfect living examples of Aryan man. Even a single filled tooth will bar a candidate from entry to the racial elite of the Reich. Each applicant for SS membership must prove his German ancestry to 1750. He must undergo thorough instruction in racial biology. He must study the mystical destiny of Aryan man. He must be obedient without question and loyal to the death. In the Aryan Empire of the future, the SS are to be the incorruptible guardians of the purity of the race. It is from their ranks that a new breed will come. It is they who will pave the way for the next phase in human evolution. For the followers of the creed of the swastika, the Führer, Adolf Hitler, has been sent by Providence. It is his mission to lay the foundations for the coming Aryan millennium. During the Great War, Rudolf von List revived an ancient Nordic prophecy. The strong one from above ends the faction. He settles everything with fair decision. Whatever he ordains shall live forever. In reality, the thousand-year Reich will live for 12 years. In those 12 years, Adolf Hitler will preside over a nightmare of mass murder, world war, and the destruction of Germany itself. And yet, long before the rise of Hitler, or even the foundation of the National Socialist Party, the seeds had been sown. Germany had inherited a legacy which would pave the way to the most horrifying chapter in human history. The occult teachings of Madame Blavatsky, Guido von List and their disciples, the Aryan fantasies of secret societies, the racial myths of militant nationalism, a legacy already inextricably bound to a symbol.
That symbol, of course, was the swastika. Replace that today with pyramids and obelisks and a few other things. Go to some New Age meetings and listen to, once again, the teachings of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. And listen to them tout the coming of the sixth root race, etc., etc., etc. It's all the same, folks. The Nazis were socialists, and socialists are Nazis. And if you're not careful, you're going to be in deep, deep trouble in the new world order. This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 99.55 kilohertz, Monday through Friday night, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, eager.
FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming, All Oldies, Most of the Time. Be sure and tune in again at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 9 Eastern, for Friday Night Live with Gary Bourgeois.
It's what we have. We have to learn to live with the good.